Hey everybody, J.J. Cooper, Jeff Ponce, another Baseball America Prospect Podcast, and it's a normal Prospect Podcast. Been a while, been a long while. We've recorded 30 deep dives since we did the last of these kind of just run-of-the-mill, regularly scheduled Wednesday Prospect Podcasts. We've had a lot more Prospect Podcast than that over the last month and a half, but we hope you've enjoyed all those. But what we're going to talk about today, both Jeff and I are getting ready to head down to spring training. We will be hitting the backfields. We will be hitting spring breakout games. I do believe Baseball America will have someone, fingers crossed, at each and every spring breakout game. But we wanted to provide a little bit of kind of like of our thoughts, kind of talk a little bit about how valuable is spring training and the information that you gather from spring training. The stars, the people who really struggle, when we talk about from a prospect perspective. And Jeff, you've been doing this for quite a while. I've been doing this for quite a while. And I'll start with a little story time of the thing I'm glad I didn't overreact to, which I think I may have mentioned briefly on the podcast before. But I'll never forget being at Angels camp the year that Shohei Ohtani came over. And do remember, this was a time where, you know, like there was a lot of questions about, okay, is Ohtani going to live up to the hype? He seems, you know, no one can do hitting and pitching. But there seemed to be at that time a lot more confidence about his pitching. And then I heard that he was going to pitch on the backfields in a scrimmage game. You know, like it was a backfields game against Angels, like rookie ball. Like this was like Levon Soto and Kevin Maiton when they had just come over to the States. And I watched Ohtani basically sit 91, 92, get hit, have multiple innings rolled, and walked away thinking like, wait a second, I've watched Ohtani in Japan a lot, and this is not that same guy. And the next week he was the same guy, and I'm really glad that I just kind of wrote that off as, well, he was in a scrimmage, he didn't really care. Yeah, I'm not saying he didn't care, but it wasn't something for, you know, actually mattered. He was working on things, I'm sure, whatever. It was just bad. And I'm really glad about that, because I would have looked really stupid to be like, Shohei Ohtani's gonna make his next start next week and he sucks, he's 92 miles an hour. And then he was like 98 and great. And he's been Shohei Ohtani ever since, pretty much. And I'm just really glad I didn't overreact to that. But at the same time, we wouldn't go to spring training and do all the work we do trying to get around the backfields, talk to people, see things, if we didn't think it was valuable. So how do you find that balance between this is useful information and I don't want to overreact to it?
Yeah, I think this is going to sound a little counterintuitive based on some of the social media material that's going to come out of my accounts and our accounts over the next couple of weeks. But I think not to get caught up in the moment. Don't get caught up in the highlights. You know, you can see a guy on the backfields, and I mean, I could probably pull random names. You'll see a guy strike out 8, you know, that will never do that again in season. And, you know, we'll have an 8 ERA. You'll see guys have 2 home run games, and all of a sudden think, I don't know, this guy's going to bounce back. And it's just that. Remember I seeing, obviously he's on the Guardians 40-man roster now, but Khalil Watson in like his first backfields, homering off of major leaguers in multiple games, had another game where he hit multiple home runs and had like a triple to the wall. And like, I remember coming, it was my first time on the backfields and covering spring training. And, you know, I think that I kind of overreacted a little bit to it. Like, it was like, wow, this looks phenomenal. I mean, he's the best player on the East Coast of Florida on the backfields. I wasn't the only person saying that. There were certainly scouts and et cetera that were watching these performances and feeling the same way, and was a highly touted first rounder. And then things went about as poorly as they possibly could have gone in the following few weeks to months for Watson. So I think that's like a perfect example. But, you know, at the same time, I think that, you know, you'll see something like, and I know this isn't a huge prospect, but like a couple of years ago, you know, we saw Jaden Hamm on the backfields and was a relative unknown, even kind of coming out of the draft, and performed really well and scouts loved it. And so, you know, that kind of put him on our radar. Is he a top 100 prospect? Is he a guy that's going to be a rotation piece going forward? Has it, you know, gone swimmingly in the whatever?
Just back a little back to where he was before a little bit.
But, you know, you'll see some things like that. And I think it's also a great opportunity to, number one, kind of catch up on a lot of the DSL guys who are coming over for the first time. So getting first looks on sort of those young players as they come over and getting a good feel for how big they are, you know, what the tools are actually like, all those sort of things. And, you know, I think it also gives you an opportunity if you're there for a bunch of different days to maybe see a variety of hitters in a variety of situations, facing a lefty, facing a righty, facing a guy who's way over the top or really, really low and slingy, someone who's breaking ball first. So you'll see so many arms come in because typically, you know, outside of maybe a little bit later in camp, you're more or less getting like multiple three-inning starts maybe throughout a game on each side. And you know, there's multiple games going on, so you're kind of bouncing back and forth. But I think the best thing is really just being able to see everything. I think it also gives you a really good feel for how an organization views a particular player, the games that they're maybe playing up in. I remember seeing George Lombard, whatever, 2 years ago, playing in AA games. And it was like, he's not going to be assigned to Somerset out of camp. But it told us a lot about how the Yankees viewed Lombard.
They weren't hiding him. They were putting him in games that they felt comfortable.
Exactly.
He could be stretched.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think you see that sort of thing, and it gives you a little bit more confidence. And then, you know, on top of it, I think being able to maybe see multiple good pitching prospects for an organization in a day and just get a really good feel for where they're at in terms of velocity, pitch movement, strike throwing, all that sort of stuff. Even just like mound presence and how they handle themselves and sort of such an unofficial setting that I think it kind of gives you an idea of like the professionalism maybe at a young age. And maybe that's maybe taken it too much away from it, but I do think you see some guys who take it a little bit more seriously than others and just how that's kind of played out over the years. Some of the best players are the guys that take it most seriously. And the last one I'll bring up is seeing a guy like Connor Griffin. So we saw him in some major league games, which is great. We saw him in the spring breakout game. Great. We didn't see him like play a full game. You got to see that in the backfields. And I can remember, you know, a year ago now, going there with Josh Norris as our trips kind of intersected on that particular day. And we both wanted to see more Connor Griffin. Sitting there, and the first ball he hit was like, you know, 390 to right center field at, you know, Pirate City, and then just him running around the bases like a gazelle and just kind of looking at Josh and him looking back at me out of the corner of his eye. And it was like an unspoken, you know, sort of like, wow.
We have gotten so much mileage for this clip that you're watching again right now. You have gotten so much mileage out of it because it's one of those, well, we were there, and it's just such a perfect moment of it explaining what he is.
And he made he played outfield that day. He made phenomenal plays in the outfield. And I think Josh and I both kind of came back with our first like update the top 100 meeting of being like, okay, we need to move up Connor Griffin. And yeah, we're going to end up moving him up again soon, but how high can we push him? And it's a reasonable reaction to all this. And then of course, you know, had a bad first game where he struck out four times. And then I don't think he struck out three times again the rest of the season.
I love that you said that because, like, there are a couple things with this I want to kind of add. One is that I do think the other thing you do get a sense of the talent of an organization, right? Now, you don't want to go overboard on that because having better, there are fewer org players now, but having better org players than another org doesn't really make that much difference at the end of the day. Like, oh, this fifth pitcher to come into this game is better than the fifth pitcher who came into the game I saw yesterday. That doesn't really matter. But you get a sense of what the organization as a whole looks like when you're looking at multiple games. Again, we've talked about it before, but the backfields is just such a wonderful experience because if you love baseball, on a certain day, like I remember being in Jupiter one time and the Marlins Cardinals decided to do all four games on the same side. And you're like, there's more baseball. Like it was both my ADHD brain, you know, actually diagnosed, like was both in heaven and hell at the same time, because everywhere I looked, there was something interesting going on. But I also was absolutely convinced that if I was focused here, I was missing something over there because you couldn't keep track of it all. That's important to me.
Yeah, I've had multiple days on that complex on the Cardinals side where they're playing four games against the Marlins. One of them was actually that Khalil Watson day. There was another day I can recall where, you know, I had one game where, you know, maybe it was Matthew Liebetor and Gordon Graceffo. That was the day, if you remember, that Graceffo hit 100 miles per hour for the first time in the TrackMan. We reported it. The double A game was Mason Wynn and Jordan Walker. Josh Baez was over, you know, in a newer draftee, was over in the low A game. And then Yadier Molina was getting at bats in the high A game that Khalil Watson was in. And I can remember he hit a ball that should have been a triple and he just ran to first base and just was like, I'm not running all the bases.
I'm good.
Like you saw, I saw a potential Hall of Famer, you know, a future all-star, a top prospect, and, you know, a rotation piece, like all within like 5 minutes of each other, just kind of zooming around within this quad.
But that's, so this is something that, you know, again, I think what we're trying to do here is useful. Like if you're follow prospects as well, we will come back from spring training and we will have our first top 100 update basically for right around the start of April. It won't be opening day, 'cause now AAA, it'll be like that weird time when AAA opening day leads into the rest of minor league opening day, but we'll try to do it pretty quickly there. And this is the useful, but also I would say probably the most challenging one we do, right? Because there's some stuff that's just simple, right? Like there are players who are hurt now who, okay, well, move them down a little bit because we don't know when they're going to be healthy again. There's, you know, guys have TJ. There's guys who are healthy again. You're like, okay, this guy we had lower because we hadn't seen him pitch in a year and a half. Now he's back on the mound. Stuff looks good. Okay, you feel a little bit more comfortable. Those are kind of the easy parts of it. The challenging part is what you just talked about, like Connor Griffin, where it's like there seems to be something tangible here that's taken a step forward, but we don't want to overreact to it. I'll give you an example of a player from this spring training that's useful to kind of talk about this. Vance Honeycutt, first round pick of the Orioles, outfielder out of North Carolina, had a year last year that was really statistically frightening. There was a lot of swing and miss. There was a lot of strikeouts, a really kind of just a really down, a disappointing year in Class A. And if you've paid any attention at all this spring training, you know that in Vance Honeycutt's first four games of spring training, he had one at bat homered, one at bat homered, one at bat homered, one at bat homered. Now, maybe even more impressively, he's had four at bats since then, somehow hasn't homered again. He's stuck on four homers in eight at bats, but he's only struck out one time this spring. Now, obviously, you don't want to just say, oh, okay, Vance Honeycutt is fixed. Everything's great now. Why is he going to make the team? You know, is he going to jump from A ball to the big leagues? Because no one's saying that. But at the same time, it is an indicator. Okay, like I've got on my to-do list, like I want to really dive into more. The Orioles knew, talking to Orioles people last year, they knew that there was work to be done with his swing, with everything. I want to see how different he looks now compared to a year or two ago. And I would say like, that's a perfect example. I was bringing up the top 100. Don't misunderstand me. We are not talking in the April top 100 meeting of, hey, does Vance Honeycutt go from the back of the Orioles top 30 onto top 100 consideration or anything like that. But it does mean like the spring training little hints does mean that he is much more a pay attention to what he's doing in April and May than he was before the spring training. So that's where I would kind of say, like, there are guys like that, right? There are guys where you want to be more focused on them, figure out what's going on, talk to people. One of us will probably be in Orioles camp at some point, you know, put eyes on him, talk to people about him, get an understanding of, okay, what's different? Is this a sign that he's actually taken a big step forward? You talked about Joshua Baez. Joshua Baez was one of those guys last year. Connor Griffin was one of those guys last year because we saw tangible swing improvements last year. How do you balance, like when we go into that top 100, we try to be, I would say the April one is one where we're like, okay, if we've got really good feedback from evaluators, from scouts, and, you know, front office officials, like, hey, this guy's really taking a step forward, we'll move a guy. But I would say this is the one where we're the most cautious, because you just feel better in May doing it than you do in April, don't you?
Yeah, and I think sometimes maybe there's guys who are neck and neck within an organization where we maybe feel like maybe this guy's trending above this guy, and we get more, you know, not just in-person looks, but in-person feedback from, you know, scouts and front office people, you know, all our contacts, that makes us more comfortable to maybe jump this guy who was two in an off-season top 30 above this guy that was one. I think that's a lot of like the sort of mechanical changes you'll see early. Might even be stuff that we were, like I said, we were questioned about in that, like, you know, January top 100 meeting. And then we maybe see it play out a little bit more in the spring. So sometimes it's stuff that we're already thinking about a lot of the time and sort of already tracking. And then, you know, once we get a little bit of that confirmation, then we're like, all right, like I feel better about moving this guy up a few spots, or maybe moving this other guy down, which would, you know, ultimately like reorder a top 30. And I think a lot of it too is draftees. You know, we'll see some draftees that they look better, or they look worse than they did, you know, at the end of the season, or if they actually debuted, or at the end of their college or high school seasons. Griffin certainly falls into that category from a positive perspective. But, you know, there's been negative ones certainly before as well. So I think it's getting a good grasp on some of that sort of thing. But it's not going to be large sort of like wholesale changes, the bigger changes that we're going to see in a later update, when once we have a little bit more to sink our teeth into with the season, more feedback, data to back all that up as well.
The number one rated ticketing app is SeatGeek, and you can get 10% off on SeatGeek's app by using the code Territory10. So you should use it, AJ.
Oh, I'm definitely going to use it for WBC games in Miami, because I want to go to the semifinals and the finals.
They're going
to
be sold out.
Absolutely. Spring training games, for the people out there who want to go to spring training games, absolutely great idea. Best seats, rated 1 through 10. And I recently had to use SeatGeek to buy tickets to a Florida Gators basketball game that was sold out. So I love the code Territory 10% off, and the rating is the best.
Yeah, he's talking about each ticket rated on a scale of 1 to 10, so you know you're getting a good deal. So look for the green dots. Green means good, red means bad. And of course, we have a code for you. Like I mentioned, it's Territory10 for 10% off your next set of tickets at SeatGeek. That's 10% off any tickets with promo code TERRITORY10. Make sure you click the link in the description to download the app and have the code automatically added to your account so you can use it later. Thank you to SeatGeek.
So I'm looking at our top 100 movement last year, so 2025, for the April update. And the big mover in the top 25 was Kevin McGonigal moving up six spots. So that just gives you an idea. Like that was the big mover in the top like 25, and it was six spots, right? So, which good. We moved him. Speaking of, you mentioned Connor Griffin. Connor Griffin, who was, you know, I would say came into the year. Yeah, Connor Griffin was moved up seven spots. He went from 57 to 50. In that first update as well. So we did move those guys, but like to give an example, like Griffin moved up seven in our April update. He moved up eight spots in our May update. He moved up 15 spots in our June update. He moved up 25 spots in our July update. So that's the path of a truly elite prospect. Like it was just like every month, it was like, okay, move him up again. Every month is like, what about now? Move them up again. Move them up again. Just keep doing it. Again, McGonigal kind of with the other example of that, I would say, because McGonigal went from 23 to 17, so six spots, then only one spot in May. Then he went up seven spots in June and went up six spots in July, which basically got him to number two. And that's where he kind of sits. So I would say that there is kind of movement like that. I would say, I don't want to, you know, make it sound like we did everything right there. That's also around the time we were hearing feedback about Colson Montgomery and kind of how much he was struggling. So he moved him down 33 spots in that first update. He was then sent to the Complex League, and it's like, oh, okay, this is bad. We dropped him, and then he ended up fixing things. So, you know, it can go, but either way, that's why I'm saying we want to react, but we don't want to overreact. But at the same time, those are kind of the things that are kind of the challenges of this. But I would say, like, if you're watching, if you're a Baseball America subscriber, our April update is modest. Our May update is where, that's like where Jackson Churio a couple of years ago really took off up the list. That's where, yeah. Hey, you know, like we've kind of, I would say that May update is the one where we feel really good about, okay, there's enough signal here. It's not just noise. Let's try to accurately reflect kind of what we're seeing. But it is something where, you know, we're going to get it right most of the time, hopefully, but we will get some of those wrong. Like, kind of along those lines, Jeff, like you mentioned the kind of like before of Khalil Watson. I would basically ask, kind of like looking at it big picture, is it pitchers or hitters who can make kind of the biggest wow to you, like where this guy's just a different guy than he was not long ago? Like when you're looking at spring training in April, is it going to be pitchers or hitters that really move this?
It's probably going to be more pitchers. Mostly because in a small sample, I can get a much better handle on, I can get a much better handle on sort of what they're throwing, how they attack, at least a good feel for what the strike throwing is. Because we have catalog data from multiple seasons, you know, whether it's their, you know, outside, and then if they're a college guy, really the only guys that won't have like real velocity on are probably high school guys. But I can kind of come back and track a little bit. All right, how, you know, this guy was such and such and such today with, you know, this sort of ride, these sort of numbers. How does that compare to what he was throwing last year? Is this a new pitch? You know, that sort of thing. And I think the other thing that's good is you're on the backfield. You know, if you're there enough and it's some of your organizations like the Blue Jays, who I cover, for example, you know, some of the coaching staff, et cetera, will come and chat with me about who's throwing. Hey, yeah, you got to check this guy out. I mean, they're going to be positive. They're not going to give me anything negative, but they'll give you some clues and some cues as to like, hey, go check this guy out when he's going, or, you know, check with so-and-so to know what the schedule is, because you have to see this guy is throwing this, this, and that. And then that kind of maybe tips you off as some stuff to look for. And I think that's always part of all this is like the chatter. And I always feel like the chatter is stronger around like what starting pitchers are going. And so you kind of chase lineups around the starting pitchers that you're going to see. So I think I can take more away from a starting pitcher, at least how they're going to look entering the season, versus a hitter where, like I said, these are really small sample size and it's much more about a larger sample against, you know, more types of pitchers, more situational stuff, all that sort of thing, and how that ultimately plays out.
But I will say, I agree with you that pitchers, I think you get more of a sense, but then the question of pitchers becomes, it used to be when I started at BA that pitchers generally were worse in spring training and you expected them to ramp up into the season. I would say nowadays that's a very different story. Like, obviously, for one, these players are paid year round now, basically. And so they do train with the team. They have off-season to-do lists, but obviously a lot of them also are spending times at facilities, all that. Sometimes you see the best stuff that you're going to see from a guy in spring training, and then it's a question of them holding on to it. So you don't want, again, we don't, everything on this seems to be summarized as don't overreact. But when you see a guy has taken a step forward stuff-wise, that's easier to kind of understand that if it's sustainable, that should have lasting ramifications in a way when, even when you see what looks like a good swing change, I would say that a good swing change, you want to see how it's tested over a month or two or three of actually facing pitching, because that's going to either show it really was a good swing change, or maybe you're better off where what you were. And sometimes you see guys who, you know, they end up going back mid-season.
And it's tough with some of the skill-based stuff. Like, you know, you may see a guy make contact for 3 days and make good swing decisions, but that doesn't necessarily mean that that's going to hold up over 4 or 5 weeks into the season. So, you know, that's some of the stuff I think with hitters that's tougher to get a handle on. Maybe it's the same with pitchers and strike throwing to a degree. But usually those guys with bad command, it's hard for them to fake it even for a day, you know. Guys that have, you know, 5 walk per 9 or, you know, 15% walk rates typically don't go out and, you know, throw 80% strikes even on the backfields. So, you know, I think that's the tricky thing with hitters, where it's more about it's kind of the bus test. Like, what are these guys looking like coming off the bus? What kind of athletes are there? I think you get a much better feel for defense than you do on video. That's always been the benefit of going and watching these guys and actually seeing what their routes are like in the outfield, or, you know, the first step, the hands, the actions, and how they're handling skips. And if you know the fields well enough, you kind of know what sort of stuff happens at certain fields, some dead spots in terms of the infield, or, you know, there's really bad shine in this particular outfield grass and guys are always dropping balls this time of the day when the sun is this strong. And there's some of that stuff that you'll pick up on too. But I think, you know, ultimately that's what the tricky part is with hitters, is just trying to know what's tangible outside of, like, he got bigger, he got stronger, he's faster, he hit ball hard, you know?
Okay. To wrap this up, I want to ask, so we're getting ready to both head to Florida. We're both doing Florida. We've got Jesus Cano and Josh Norris are going to Arizona. We've got Bill Mitchell out there as well. So what, I'll start, but like a couple of things that you're looking forward to seeing. Obviously some of it, we're both looking forward to seeing, some of it is stuff that we don't know yet. That's what most important, most fun part is, oh, I've got to see someone I didn't know was any good. And now I very much, they're on my radar. That's going to be fun. But I'll just give an example. I'm hoping to get to Lakeland. And when I get to Lakeland, I want to see, okay, who are the pitchers here, right? Because that's something where I did the Tigers top 30 for us, and there's not a pitcher in the top 10. Now, I'm expecting that some of those guys, have had a number of guys who have been injured, want to see some of the, you know, put eyes on some of those guys and see, like, okay, who are the guys who could be moving in to that top 10 consideration? That'd be one. I also kind of like some of their younger shortstops, and even not younger shortstop, like John Peck has made it up for some games, you know, Jack Penny, guys like that. But that's one that stands out for me. What are some things that you're looking forward to seeing when you go to Florida?
Yeah, I think, you know, number one, and I think this is definitely going to fall into the category of cheating JJ, it's going to be hopefully seeing Team Japan play 2 games in the WBC. That's going to be the first thing I'm looking for. But in the mornings of the second semifinal game and the finals, which is St. Patrick's Day, I'm not going to be in an Irish bar. I'm going to be driving up north a little bit to the Cardinals complex, and I'm going to try to hopefully see some of these Cardinals drafty arms. And just in general, probably the best system that I've had to cover for a handbook thus far in terms of how it was ranked coming out of the handbook. I've obviously seen plenty of Weatherholt, but I want to see maybe some Liam Doyle. I'd love to see Tanner Franklin, Cade Crossland, some of those guys. And, you know, just some of the other, you know, Daniel Ortiz, some of the other Cardinals guys. I'm excited about that. I'm excited to get to Red Sox camp the day after the WBC. I'm going to drive down there the first morning, probably try to maybe shoot down to Fort Myers again for some camp stuff over the next couple of days. But that first day is going to be, I'm going to get up early. I'm going to drive, you know, from Fort Lauderdale over to Fort Myers, make that couple of hour drive, get there first thing in the morning, and, you know, watch hopefully some good arms in the backfield. And there's plenty of Red Sox arms to be excited about and see, you know, who could throw in a given day. There's a lot of depth there, and maybe see some Justin Gonzalez, who I think is one player that I'm keenly aware of and going to be following, you know, with, you know, my extra focus glasses here as a potential top 100 riser. I think that all of the ingredients are here. He's someone I'm kind of stumping for in the off season. They're going to be on all my breakout lists and every other kind of article I'm going to write in that vein. So I think that's kind of the high level stuff. I'm going to get to a whole bunch of camps because they're going to be in Fort Lauderdale, Miami for WBC, shooting over to Fort Myers, Sarasota, Bradenton, Tampa, back to West Palm for, you know, about 3 days, to catch some more Cardinals, Astros, you know, Marlins, Nationals camp. And I'm kind of excited for the Nationals camp. It's a different feel now with the Nationals. Some of these folks I know a little bit from the Red Sox. You know, there's some other former colleagues here that maybe work for the organization now. So much friendlier environment. I'm going to walk across the parking lot from the Astros games, go over to the Nats, see Eli Willett's the number one pick. Regardless of how you feel about a number one pick, anytime you get to see one of those guys the following spring, I always think that's exciting. Cool. There's some really interesting arms.
I promise you at Nats camp, whatever field you're looking at, there's going to be a shortstop worth paying attention to because they only have about 102 of them now.
Yeah, exactly. So. Yeah, but there's plenty going on, I think, at all these complexes in Florida. We've had down years with Florida. We've had up years with Florida. The last couple feel like they've been a little bit more up. I'm excited for that. And then next year we're going to go down and we're going to have a tournament. So we may not even know where we're going from day to day. So that's going to be exciting.
I would say my most exciting day of this is I'm starting off on the Atlantic coast and I'm going to try to pull off the triple header because there are three spring breakout games over there. There's a 1, there's a 4, and there's a 7. And I won't get 27 innings. There's just no way the driving will mean that I won't get 27, but I think I can get about 23, you know. So 23 innings of spring breakout in one day is pretty good. And I would, if I was stupid, then drive over because then I'm going to head over to the, you know, to the breakout games on the other side. But I will be doing that the next morning because, as you and I both know, there's not really a whole lot of places to stay halfway between that's Alligator Alley. I'm not hanging out with the alligators.
There's nothing but highway and swamp.
Yes. You know, but it is going to be very exciting to see. And, you know, it's again, this is one of the great times of year. We will be talking about it on the podcast next week, actually by Wednesday. Our podcast next week may be a little bit delayed because Jeff and I will be in person together at some point next week. So we will probably bring the mics and record in person at some point, you know, do the prospect pod. And we'll have a lot because we will be right at spring breakouts, but we'll both hit backfields, all that as well. So we'll be looking forward to that. So for Jeff, I'm JJ. We thank you for joining us on the Baseball America Prospect Podcast. Please like and subscribe and obviously check out all the other content we have on the Baseball America Podcast feed, the YouTube channel, and most importantly, baseballamerica.com. If you enjoy this and you haven't checked out baseballamerica.com, I promise you, you will enjoy so much of you can find over there. Everything to get you ready for the season. And by the way, we're rolling along as we record this. We're getting ready. We're going to hop off and then go check out some WBC action because that's going on as well. For Jeff, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.